Hi, this is Betty, and I'm reading from the News Gazette for Friday, January 15th. And let's get the information about the coronavirus pandemic. In Illinois, there's 1,052,068 cases, and there's 17,928 deaths. In Champaign County, there's 15,097 cases with 93 deaths. And in Douglas County, 2,064 cases, 35 deaths. And Ford County, there's 1,364 cases with 40 deaths. In Iroquois County, there's 2,544 cases with 53 deaths. And see some of the impact information. It says if hospitalizations drop next 2 days, it's likely on to tier two. And 1,439 get first vaccine dose in Champaign County. And then other area county vaccine totals. Douglas County has 648 first doses, and 33 people have both doses. In Ford County, there was 486 first doses and 67 was second doses. And in Iroquois County, 1,247 first doses and 244 second doses. And in Piatt County, there's 784 first doses and 60 people have gotten second doses. And in Vermilion, 1,101 first doses and 59 second doses. So that's pretty much summarizes the coronavirus pandemic. And see, one of the titles on the first page of the paper is Finalists Lay Out Their Visions. And this is on Unit 4 Superintendent. And this is by Anthony Zillis. On a recent trip to town, Sheila Boozer pulled over when she saw families at a Champaign school playground and struck up a conversation. She did the same thing when she saw a group of black students walking on the street and in the local downtown businesses she visited. She didn't tell them she was one of the three finalists for a superintendent position. Instead, she simply asked them what they thought about the district. I just said, I have the potential of moving to Champaign. Can you tell me about the school system, said Boozer, currently Director of Teaching and Learning and Technology for Springfield Public Schools. There were a lot of great things people had to say, and there were a lot of things they want to be different. I talk to any and everybody, she added. My kids say, you look for people to talk to, and I say, we need to make sure we're telling the right story. During half-hour virtual sessions, Thursday, Boozer and two other finalists, Yvonne Stokes and Eric Pruitt, answered questions and laid out their visions for the district. They answered questions on the district's strategic plan and racism resolution and about closing the achievement gap. Boozer has spent her career in the Springfield District after graduating from the University of Illinois Springfield, culminating in her current job, which she held since 2014. Stokes is the assistant superintendent for Munster, Indiana Public Schools and has worked in the Fort Wayne and Indianapolis districts. Pruitt spent most of his career in Chicago Public Schools, starting as a first grade teacher and rising to his current position of deputy chief of high schools. Stokes talked about focusing on literacy and diversifying gifted programming and the need for community engagement. My plan is foremost to promote community engagement sessions where we as district staff and district leaders go into the community via the civic groups of homeowners, associations, or recreational communities, but we go into the community on a regular basis. All three spoke glowingly about the strategic plan and racism resolution, and Pruitt spoke about his experience leading a team that developed a strategic plan in Houston. We focused primarily on empowering families and communities, leadership, teacher and instructional excellence, school design, and social and emotional support. I was drawn to Champaign because the district has developed expectations of how adults should work together and work to serve the needs of all students. The district will make its choice within 4 or 5 days after Tuesday's final interviews, said Gloria Davis, a representative of the search the district hired who monitored Thursday's meetings. The candidates will visit schools that day. Whoever is chosen will have to make tough decisions about the schools of choice programs, gifted education, and maybe even the return to in-person school this fall. Another first page story is Urbana Middle School puts together puzzle of in-person classes. And this is by Anthony Zillis also. As Principal Joe Remelt and his staff mapped out what classes would look like when students returned to Urbana Middle School on Tuesday, they began putting together a spreadsheet detailing the various aspects they need to think about in different tabs. Those tabs began to pile up as they planned out how they'd handle arrival and dismissal, transitioning students from one area to another, how a teacher might reserve a bigger room, and more. We have 15 tabs on this spreadsheet of different plans. It's taken a lot of scheduling of staff and teachers and students and mapping out the traffic flow within the school, putting in all the procedures and routines and expectations for how to be back in person with this many students. We haven't had this many students in the building since March. We have had different moments where we have had 20 or more students in the buildings for our learning lab spaces. For the Urbana School District, next week will be a completely new experience. Unlike most districts in the area, Urbana has only invited a few handfuls of students back to its buildings since learning went virtual statewide in March. At the middle and high school levels, only a few students were invited at a time for learning labs to help struggling students. For the last few weeks, though, staff have been calling students to invite them to return. Students given priority include those who have struggled with attendance, have requirements with their individualized education program, or simply could benefit from having teachers in a room in front of them. Around 200 students are expected back Tuesday, Remelt said. They will get additional instruction in the morning, followed by a normal online routine in the afternoon. This article on the front page has to do with the MLK Celebration Award winners, and it's second in a three-part series. And the title of the article is Diaz, God-Inspired Justice Needed. And this is by Dave Hinton. Ricardo Diaz is no stranger to advocating for social change. When he first became involved in pushing for immigration policy change with peaceful marches in Pennsylvania, New Jersey, and Delaware in the mid-2000s, he was awarded the Martin Luther King Jr. Award. "It just blew me away," he said. Diaz continues his advocacy work and has been selected for an award in recognition of his efforts to uphold King's principles and ideals in Champaign-Urbana. The James R. Burgess Jr. Susan Freiberg Humanitarian Award is the award that he is going to be given. It will be presented at the 20th annual Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. countywide celebration at 3 p.m. Sunday. Due to the pandemic, the ceremony will be held virtually via Zoom. A link will be shared at MLKCelebration.org. www.sheilaboozer.org and on social media prior to the ceremony. Diaz 57 is a principal and ex-Penn consultants, which seeks to bridge management to Latino and Spanish-speaking employees. Among the services it offers are strategizing with management for communication, employee needs, and training methods. He most recently gave training to the Urbana Police Department on cultural issues. A native of Mexico, Diaz moved to the United States at age 12 and would return yearly to see his native country until the death of his mother. He completed most of his education in the U.S. He began his public service life in Philadelphia in 1994, moving there to attend the University of Pennsylvania. It was there that he began the self-realization that I need to do more locally. That's where I learned I had a knack for understanding immigrants and their integration or lack thereof. I ended up advocating for the contribution and needs of immigrants. He said he moved to Central Illinois in 2008 to find out who was working with immigrants and how they were doing. He held several posts with the University of Illinois, but his main affiliation was with the Graduate College and Illinois Extension, especially youth development. He planned and concluded a pilot project to integrate immigrant families into the benefits of the university's extension network. Youth services were expanded to 9 Illinois rural counties to the rest of the state. 4-H Hispanic participation climbed significantly. Among his volunteer efforts are serving as member of the CU Immigration Forum, chairman and the board of the board of the New American Welcome Center, board member for of the Immigration Project and Champaign County Healthcare Consumers, and former chairman Urbana's Civilian Police Review Board. And he answered a few questions ahead of Sunday service. One of the questions was, what is your favorite Martin Luther King speech? Probably the letter from Birmingham Jail. It's short, it's to the point, but I think it calls out for people to act on their purported beliefs. The clarity is a wake-up call to those who are riding the fence or are hesitant about the repercussions for acting on their beliefs. It's not enough to speak, you've got to act on it, adding that King advocated nonviolence. Question, how would King feel about what's happening today? Its answer is, it's more than feelings. I believe that he would be indignant at the injustices and disparity, but he would also be indignant about the besmirching of the symbols of our liberty, and therefore he would want to make sure everyone has a fair shake before the law. It's not just justice for blacks. Question, is there a voice as impactful as King now, or is there someone on the horizon? Diaz's answer. We tend to glorify people and romanticize what they said. With time, their memory becomes larger, and therefore we don't value the present people in the same way. It's very clear that George Washington did not know he was going to win and had no idea when he went across the Delaware they were going to survive. All he knew was his men were in danger and he had to do something to get them out. It turned out it was a turning point. Even now, we don't know whose peace will be the one that is remembered. While Dr. King was a great man with oration, by the time he was killed, he was not an icon just for the African Americans. He was an icon for the poor, for the suffering. He was looking for justice at all levels. We remember the part that speaks to racial justice. It's God-inspired justice. We all have failings, including Dr. King, but his accomplishments tip the balance towards good. Would that we all could be like that. And following up on the next section of the paper is our county And it starts out with High School Confidential, which is on Fridays during the school year. Area students fill us on and what's happening in their hallways. And at Milford, the graphic design class completed its first major project, designing and screen printing shirts for the art club. At Centennial, winners of the 36th annual MLK Junior Living the Dream Scholarships, and they are Paige White, Ian Harris, Alicia Pelmore, and Medina Bakabul Natumba, and the alternate is Brandon Bui. Danville. Staff and students were excited to learn of Tevin Smith's commitment to play college basketball at Cal State Fullerton. Also, the school has been hosting a popular game called Among Us for virtual learning students to join in and experience school spirit. At Champaign Central, over the break, members of the boys' swimming and diving team volunteered to ring bells for Salvation Army. And those volunteers were Ferris Swede, Nick Serafin, Divit Patel, Josh Noah, Jake Serafin, Hadi Ahmed, and Noah Anaya, Joe Powers, E.G., Max Quirk, Nolan Miller, Austin Barker, Jack Vesquez, Maddox Dempsey, Cleve Arner, Aiden Williams, Jackson Dillo, Jonathan Smith, Ethan Yager, and Trevor Plattner. And at Georgetown Ridge Farm, the guidance department is offering a virtual college fair to juniors and seniors. Indiana State on Monday kicked off the series that also includes the University of Illinois on January 28th. And in Monticello, there's a new this school year, it's called the SAFE Club, S-A-F-E, which stands for Students Alliance for Environment, which recently had its second meeting. And the students involved are Stella Miller, Olivia Ray, Noah Beam, Ashley Long, Claire Keating, and Riley Combs. At Hoopston area, during due, and those quotes around that period, students Sita Johnson Left and Ella Turan work on book covers for librarian Jacqueline Gregory in the library. And that is all of the High School Confidential this week. And others, article is St. Joseph Ogden Remembering Glenn Fisher. And the title of the article is He Was There Whenever and Wherever Spartans Needed Him. And this is by Nora Mayberry Daniels. Glenn Fisher liked to tease people from the high school football coach to school resource officer. In essence, if he took a moment to give you a hard time, he was letting you know he liked you. Fisher passed away January 7th at the age of 81. St. Joseph Ogden Superintendent Brian Books said his fondest memory of Fisher was sitting next to him at an athletic event. And him giving me a hard time about whatever topic he chose. He liked to sit on the bleachers in the southeast corner of the gym during basketball or volleyball games. So I always made it a point to go over and talk to him. He always found something to razz me about, which I learned very quickly when I came here 18 years ago, that it meant he really liked you as a person. I felt very honored back then and still do to this day that Glenn Fisher thought enough of me to spend time with me in conversation, joke around with me, and share all of the knowledge he had on a variety of topics. I will really miss all of that and sincerely cherish all of the times I did share with him. Fisher left an indelible legacy at the high school he loved. For more than 30 years, he served as SJO's head custodian and made sure the Spartan Sports Complex, which will soon bear his name, was in immaculate condition. He was truly a good man, said Alicia Maxey, a family friend. He was like a father to me, and I was blessed to know him. Maxey said he would often tease her that he was having a good day before he saw her. Glenn was humble and didn't like special attention, but he was a loyal friend. He had a way about him that made my day brighter when I saw him. Maxey and Fisher often worked together when Maxey was the school's resource officer. She said when she started at the school, Fisher was already semi-retired, but was driving a bus route. When he completely retired, he would still donate countless hours working to make the school better. He was always helping with something, especially the football field. Fisher's pride in how the football field looked led to a friendship with former SJO football coach Dick Duval. Fisher was the first person Duval met after his interview in 1988. That's when he told Duval he had never met a football coach who knew what they were talking about. He later told me that he just said that to see if he could get a reaction out of me. Duval and Fisher had breakfast together every Friday morning since Duval's second year at SJO, a tradition they continued even after Duval's retirement in 2015. Every Friday, he always said in front of his cronies as I walked into the restaurant, "If he would have just listened to me, we would have had 5 state championships," said Duval, who compiled a 251-75 record with the Spartans that included 5 state runner-ups. Brooks said when he was hired in 2003 as a teacher and coach, he assumed Fisher still worked at the high school because he was working on something outside. He came to find out that the Fisher had retired a few years prior. He was doing that completely on his own and all to make SJO a better place. Duval let Fisher ride the bus to distant playoff games. Fisher always gave the coaches chocolate candy as a good luck charm. In 2013, when the bus arrived in DeKalb for the state championship game, Fisher joked with Duval, "If you don't win, don't get back on this bus." The Spartans lost 43-41 in overtime to Stillman Valley. "As I stepped onto the bus, I turned to Glenn and asked if I could get back on the bus," Duval said. "Glenn just grabbed my hand and said, 'It's not fair.' I cried most of the way home, and Glenn just held my hand the whole time. Glenn had a heart of gold. I love Glenn Fisher. He would do anything for me if I asked him, even at the end when he was hurting. He was more worried about how I was feeling. I miss him." So that's quite a tribute to Glenn Fisher. There's a picture on the county of Champaign Public Works employee Zach Woodbury dumped salt into the back of a truck driven by Craig Camphor on Thursday in Champaign. They were preparing for inclement weather by dipping into the city's recent 800-ton salt delivery. Crews were scheduled to begin salting area roads early Friday, depending on the weather. And I guess the weather, there's going to be snow squalls all over for today and tomorrow, so may need that salt. So we've got another article that says, and this is out of the city of Danville, race, age discrimination suit settled for $250,000. This is by Ben Zigderman. The only black administrative assistant in the city of Danville has reached a $250,000 settlement with the city, which she accused of race and age discrimination as in a federal lawsuit. As part of the settlement, the civil case filed last year was dismissed Tuesday, and the employee, Lisa Robinson, agreed to retire in November. The city agreed to provide a letter thanking her for more than her 20 years of service. Excuse me. The city also agreed to send an email to employees reminding them of its policies on discrimination, harassment, and retaliation, and to present training this year to its employees on harassment, cultural diversity, and discrimination. The settlement was approved last month by the Danville City Council, and the city has denied liability. Without any admission as to the as to fault, liability, or wrongdoing, or as to the validity of the other party's position, and to avoid further litigation expense and the uncertainty inherent to all parties. The parties to this agreement desire to forever resolve and compromise all of the claims asserted, the settlement says. Robinson alleged that when she worked for the Department of Engineering and Urban Services, she was subjected to a targeted campaign of unlawful discrimination and harassment based on her race, she's black, and age, according to the suit. The suit alleges that she had some of her job duties removed, wasn't given information necessary to do her job, was ignored, and had her time off requests denied. After she said she filed complaints, Robinson alleged she was unfairly terminated in 2018 by the department's then director, David Schnell, and former mayor, Scott Eisenhower. After an arbitrator ordered the city to reinstate her, she was rehired in the Department of Public Safety to work for its then director, Larry Thomason. In her lawsuit, she alleged she faced continued retaliation, such as never receiving a job description, not receiving training, and being denied access to files. Robinson said she reported this to current mayor Ricky Williams Jr., who she alleged ignored the report. The Equal Employment Opportunity Commission issued a determination in September 2019 that there was reasonable cause to believe that Danville discriminated against plaintiffs because of her race, according to the suit. Robinson was represented by Chicago attorney Jeffrey R. Colwin, who did not return a request for comment on the settlement. The city and its employees were represented by Northbrook attorney Julie A. Brutch, who declined to comment. Okay, we have Top of the Morning by Bob Asmussen. The residents of Prairie Winds of Urbana are always willing to pitch in to help the community, even in the middle of a pandemic. While in quarantine, they came up with a unique way to do their part, knitting. On Monday, Whitney Emmert, Director of Sales and Marketing, and Sierra Shaw, Resident Service Coordinator, delivered a basket of handmade mittens, hats, and scarves for CU at Austin's Place, which opens today. Shaw has been doing different things with the residents to keep them active, keep their minds going, so she started a knitting club. Prairie Winds residents have been working on their winter gear for a few months. Our residents were so excited to be able to give back to the community. It's something fun that they get to do, that they know they are putting out a greater good. Residents are patiently awaiting their COVID-19 vaccines, which are expected by the end of the month. They won't have to leave this facility for the two-dose vaccinations. We will be able to do that in-house. Prairie Winds has 78 residents age 65 and older. These residents are ready for something new, to see a little bit of light at the end of the tunnel. The residents understand there will still be limits after they receive their first shot. In non-pandemic times, Prairie Wind residents are very active, both at the facility and in the community. That has been limited since mid-March. And see, we have some information on international history. Oh, in 1892, the original rules of basketball were published for the first time in Springfield, Massachusetts, where the game originated. We've got in 1929, civil rights leader Martin Luther King Jr. was born in Atlanta. And in 1943, work was completed on the Pentagon. And this ends the first half of reading the News Gazette for Friday, January 15th. I'll be back shortly to read the second half.